You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Hot damn, it worked. Okay.
All
right. While Rose was talking, I did the random generator, and Suzanne is our next host.
Yay!
I am next. Okay, well, that reduces the the possibility that anybody else would pick this person, so.
Now, we have like 3 decades to play with. Do you really have a fear that somebody would take it?
I guess so, because when you're fixated on that person, then you think, well, it's so obvious, somebody else is going to make that decision.
This is 80-something podcast.
Banzai!
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 I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Ghostbusters. Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
It to each other. And party on, dudes!
Okay, well, why don't I sign in? Hi, everybody. We are back at Banzai Retro Club, and I'm Suzanne. And we have the whole crew with us today. We have Dave.
Hello.
We have Rose.
Hello.
And we have Scott.
Hey, everybody.
And the gang is all here. So what we've been doing is where we've picked an icon from the movies, from the decades that we are focusing on here. And so we're each taking a turn to do a little tour, you know, of our favorite people. So the question from Dave was, why would I think that maybe somebody would pick this person when we have 3 decades to choose from? But this person I am picking pretty much covers all of these decades and more. So it's hard to avoid him. But in any case, when I wanted to think about who made a really huge contribution to movies, Robin Williams came to mind for me.
Oh,
good call.
Nice.
And yeah. And it's very sad, of course, because I'm still trying to get over the fact that somebody who just brought so much like joy and laughter to so many people could not find a way to be happy himself. So that is, you know, incredibly sad. But when you look at just the body of work that he has contributed to all of us, it's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing.
It is.
And yeah, and it's, you know, starting with, I mean, we're specifically want to talk about movies, but of course he got his start in television, or actually before that, just like as a, you know, kind of crazy weird stand up in the 70s, who was so manic and so creative that you could barely keep up with him. I heard that people on Mork and Mindy, they were just exhausted. You know, he was so funny, but he was just so exhaustingly improvisational that they sometimes just didn't know what to do. The rest of the people on the set were at a loss to keep up with him.
Mork calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Mork calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Mork calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Come in, laser breath.
Watch it, Mork. I'm only 60 million light years away. Just tell me what you've learned about Earth.
Oh, I've learned a lot. So much it's hard to comprehend. It seems that everyone on this planet is an individual, and not only that, they're proud of it.
Amazing. If everyone's different, how can a society function?
Not very well. They almost locked me up because they thought my mind was imperfect.
Intelligent life.
Orson, something very strange happened that really confuses me. I met this Earth girl and her biological father, and at my hearing, they came to my defense, especially the girl. She defied the system to protect me.
Why would she do such a thing?
I don't know. Must have something to do with emotions.
Investigate the phenomenon closely. It's interesting behavior, even if it is irrational.
Yes, it is. Orson, this may sound strange, but knowing that someone would do that for me, well, it makes me feel really good inside.
Just remember, Mork, you're sent there to observe, not to get involved.
Yes, Your Immenseness. This is Mork, signing off from Boulder, Colorado. Until next week.
No.
Okay, and then once we got to the early 80s, he moved into the film world. I believe starting with a movie that I really do like, which was, well, actually, I think his first movie was Popeye, which was not much of a tour de force, but.
Are you kidding me? I love that movie.
Did you really?
Me too.
I didn't think much of it, but.
Oh, it's great.
Maybe I don't love Shelley Duvall. I think everything she does is a little wimpy, but. But
yeah.
You said wimpy.
Yeah, wimpy. There's a wimpy character in there. But I don't know. I was going to kind of skip over this one. Yeah.
Yeah, buy me a burger today. I'll gladly pay you next Tuesday.
But yeah. I guess if you're going to make a foray into films, you know, you kind of do what you can do. And it's nice that he had a leading role. And it was a kind of a, you know, talking about icons, it was an iconic character. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't think that was such a great movie. I thought it was kind of silly. But if we skip to 1982, there was a movie called The World According to Garp.
Welcome to The World According to Garp, where anything can happen, and usually does.
When I get older, losing my hair, many years from now, will you still be sending me a balance?
Be safe here.
Enjoy the most entertaining movie of the summer, The World According to Garp, rated R. Now playing. Check newspapers for a theater near you.
Great. Oh yeah.
Based on a book, which was really a kind of strange, wacky little book. Actually, not that little. And he did good. It wasn't like a straight comedy role. Like there weren't big laughs mm-hmm. in this film. There was a lot of serious stuff going on, but it did have that like weird, ironic kind of feeling where there were things going on that were funny situations. It's just that it was painful for the people experiencing them on the screen, you know? And he was able to pull that off despite the fact that he was really just known as a goofy comedian at the time.
Yeah, it was a step out of his normal personality that everybody's used to, I think.
Yeah,
this is a fascinating movie, The World According to Garp. John Lithgow playing a crossdresser was just
that was surprising,
bizarre. Like it really caught me off guard. Like
time too, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was way ahead of its time.
As far as a film representation, so. Right.
Yeah, no, this is I'm so glad that you picked Robin Williams because I've loved pretty much everything I've seen him do. He's such a great addition to the acting world. When you saw him first do Mork on Happy Days, you're like, wow, who is this dude?
Right. It was one of those moments where you're like, how could this person not become outrageously famous? He's just so unique, and he was like seven people on stage at once when he started, you know, when it once got rolling. So
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, once he got into the 80s, I knew he did the like an HBO special or something of his, just his stand-up. And I remember how popular that was. Like, everybody was raving about that that HBO special.
Vestron presents America's number one comedian, Robin Williams, in the all-new, critically acclaimed Robin Williams and Evening at the Met, live from the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City.
Thank you. Howdy. Oh, wrong opera house. Thank you. God damn. Wonder if Pavarotti's at the improv going, two Jews walk into a bar. Yes. Isn't it strange to think that if you commit sodomy in Georgia, they're going to put you in a cell with another man who's going to sodomize you? Whoa. All these beer commercials usually show big men, manly men doing manly things. You've just killed a small animal. It's time for a light beer. Why not have a realistic beer commercial? What's the realistic thing about beer? Where you go, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. You've just pissed on a dumpster. It's Miller time. And I grant you a wish, and you a wish, and me that I'll one day have an ending and know when to get the fuck off the stage. God bless New York!
Robin Williams, 86, featured on CBS's 60 Minutes and the cover of Newsweek magazine, direct to you.
So anyway, go on. World According to Garp.
Yeah. Well, he did tons of movies. I don't know that. I mean, it would take too long to go through all of them. But some of my favorites going through the years. In the 80s, he did a film called Moscow on the Hudson.
Great one.
Where he played an immigrant from Russia, which he pulled off pretty well. He had defected and was just like this innocent running around. I believe it might have been New York City. I'm trying to remember. I remember a scene with him walking into a supermarket and asking where the coffee was, and they told him, "Oh, right over here." And he said, "No, coffee line. Where's the coffee line?" Because in other words, you know, you had to stand outside in the snow and, you know, for half an hour to get coffee where he came from. And he walked through the supermarket and just cried because there was just such abundance all over the place. It was an interesting scene. And let's see. Good Morning Vietnam was another cool film.
Can we back up a little bit?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Best of Times was a good film, too. A football movie.
I never saw that one. That's coming back to me.
It's a football movie with Kurt Russell.
Yes, I remember seeing that.
That was fun. It was it's kind of a reminiscing movie actually.
Yeah.
When they were in high school, that was the best of times because they were both on the football team and you know it was the big play that was like. It didn't get completed or something went wrong in the big play in high school. So they went back and kind of tried to replay the football game or something along those lines. I haven't seen this in a long time, but it was a funny movie. They had a lot of good funny stuff in there. And then Club Paradise was another one that I liked a lot too. Kind of a hidden gem in his history.
I see that was a Harold Ramis movie. So,
Never Club saw Paradise.
It, but that sounds like it could be funny.
Club Paradise Best of Times. Club Paradise was fun. Club Paradise took place in a on an island, and it was a resort that he was trying to reinvigorate or something along those lines, and you know,
hilarity ensues.
Rick Moranis,
Peter O'Toole. Eugene Levy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Peter O'Toole.
Yeah, maybe we should rent it.
Yeah. It's a good one. Yeah, Club Paradise. It was one of those. It's kind of one that didn't get a lot of popularity, but I remember it as being a pretty funny movie.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anyway, go on. Go back to one of his most iconic roles.
Good Morning Vietnam. I remember seeing it. Once again, it wasn't a vehicle where he got to be Mr. Funny. But he did get to kind of patter and you saw his ability to be very engaging in a really quick narrative and be kind of improvisational. But as a character, you know, as someone else who was kind of famous for that kind of thing. So that was, and I think I got, I think he got an award or a nomination for that. Maybe the first one, if I'm remembering right. But, so that was, you know, once again, he just kept stretching. The next film that he did, this is like a quirky little favorite of mine all around. A Terry Gilliam movie called The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yes. That was
which was a wacky, dreamy film, mm-hmm. Where he played the king of the moon, and they the characters, which was you know the baron, and he takes one little girl from town, and he has these old cohorts that he digs up, and they keep going back and forth in time, and they're young, and they're old, and they're flying, and they're in the you know it's very strange. Kind of dreamy journey that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
So they fly in their balloon off to the moon, and the moon, the king and queen are like these huge giant figures and they're fighting. And what happens is Robin Williams as the moon king has like this double personality where he's this kind of erudite person when his head is connected to his body. But the head doesn't want to be with the body because the body is all, you know, like sexed up. And so like this big, there are this big plate where his head spins off into this will be intellectual by itself. And the body chases mm-hmm. the wife all around the room screaming.
Gosh.
And it's bizarre and it's hysterical.
It's kind of an acid trip, really. It's a very bizarre movie.
It is. But, you know, I like that kind of thing.
It's kind of like the Forbidden Zone.
Yeah, oh dear God.
You have to bring it up once on each podcast. No, it is like thematically.
We lost Scott all of a sudden. Did you hear that? We lost Scott.
Wait, hold on. 1 second. What was that, honey? You found my cod piece?
Okay. Oh, Jesus.
Okay. So now anything else that we need to mention before we've hit the cod pieces and the Forbidden Zone. Okay, let's see. Now, the next movie, I have to admit, shame on me, I have never seen Dead Poets Society. But you guys can say a few words about it because everyone raves, and I'm told it's one of his best performances. So,
dare to walk a new path. Dare to strike out and find new ground.
Audiences and critics have found a new and different kind of movie. A movie that's left them cheering and touched their lives.
Yes!
Touchstone Pictures presents Robin Williams.
Well, is this a dagger I see before me?
In the most highly acclaimed movie of the year, Dead Poets Society.
Language was developed for one endeavor, and that is
to communicate.
No! To woo women.
Gene Shalit hailed Dead Poets Society as a classic, one of the most magnificent motion pictures I've seen.
Tear out the entire introduction. Rip, shred, tear.
It's a compelling drama. Robin Williams' acting will astonish you. Rave sneak previews.
This is a battle, a war, and the casualties could be your hearts and souls.
And Joel Siegel proclaims Robin Williams brilliant. Robin Williams, he'll make you laugh.
I like Byron, I give him a 42, but I can't dance to it.
He'll make you feel.
Seize the day.
I'm gonna do it!
He'll make you care.
Medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits. But poetry, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for.
Touchstone Pictures presents Dead Poets Society. Discover for yourself what all the cheering is about.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that movie. He's so iconic in it where he's this teacher and he's kind of in this prep school and he's kind of bucking the system for his methods of teaching. Like even one of the first days that he starts teaching, he has all the kids rip out pages of chapter one because he's trying to teach poetry, but he's trying to get the kids to think for themselves. And in the community that they're in, they're all very structured. And his first, you know, lesson is basically having them rip out, like, the introduction to poetry, you know, from their textbook. You know, so it's really interesting seeing him play that role. But you can kind of see him kind of rebelling, you know, as part of his character. And I think he did, you know, did it brilliantly.
Excellent.
Yeah, that... It's a good movie overall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of takeoffs of students standing on desks.
Yep.
So it seemed to be quite inspirational for people through the decades. Next one, did anybody see a film called Awakenings?
Oh, I did. My God.
Awakenings was a really cool movie about Oliver Sacks. Mm-hmm. And I had, at the time, read Oliver Sacks' book, which was, what was it called? The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Which was a very interesting, you know, study of all these different people that he, as a neurologist, met with who had all these strange syndromes. You know, they couldn't remember past 10 minutes. And every time they looked in the mirror, they saw themselves. They thought they were going to be seeing themselves at 20 when they were actually like 75 years old. And, you know, people who couldn't recognize their hands, or they couldn't like find the words for things, or there were a lot of like interesting syndromes that this doctor actually dealt with in real life. Mm-hmm. But this particular film focused on a certain syndrome that was happening to people who had suffered from encephalitis, mm-hmm. you know, and swelling of the brain, where they went into these frozen comas and nobody really knew whether they had some kind of consciousness and just were frozen, or if they mm-hmm. were like comatose or what have you. And he comes up with some kind of serum that brings a ward of these encephalactic patients back to consciousness, starting with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a journey of him teaching them, you know, kind of bringing them back to life and taking them places and they're beginning to feeling like, you know, they have life again, but the serum starts to fail and they start to get kind of violent and then eventually slip back into their comatose states. And it's very frustrating and emotional throughout the whole thing.
So yeah.
He was asleep for 30 years.
Your patients haven't moved in decades.
These people are alive inside.
Until a doctor with a dream.
Dr. Sayer, it's a miracle.
Opened his eyes.
Have you thought what you'd like to do today?
Everything.
His mind.
He didn't wake a thing, he woke a person.
And his heart.
And what I feel is the freedom of life, the wonderment of life.
Robert De Niro, Robin Williams, Awakenings.
Exclusive Toronto engagement starts Thursday at the York.
This movie is one of the most emotionally straining movies for me. Mm-hmm. I don't have any personal experience with that kind of medical, you know, within my family or anything like that. But this one tugged on my heartstrings so strongly. And I think the performances of Robin Williams and Robert De Niro were out freaking standing in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah, they absolutely.
Like the first time I saw it, blew my mind. I cried.
Yeah.
And then I had to watch it several times after that. Years, you know, as the years went on, I kept going back to revisit it. It is such a powerful movie, and Robin Williams' performance in that is just phenomenal. Robert De Niro is a lot of people give him, you know, Robert De Niro a lot of credit for like Taxi Driver and several other things. I think this was his best performance ever. It blew my mind. I'm so glad that you touched on this movie, because it is
a wonderful movie.
Outstanding movie that a lot of people don't know about. It's not easy to watch, I'm going to say. It's not.
Yeah,
you will cry. You will be moved. It is heart-wrenching, but it is very interesting. And it's based on some type of, you know, some of the medical studies that were going on at the time.
Yeah.
So it's just – such a strong movie.
Yeah.
And probably it ranks up there as probably either one or two of my favorite Robin Williams movies.
Yeah.
Of all time.
Yeah.
That and Good Morning Vietnam. Those two are probably my two favorites.
Yeah. So, Penny Marshall directed it too.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
Major. Okay. Yeah. And I don't know if, you know, you guys go back, how far you go back in the movie history, but this movie kind of was reminiscent of a movie with Cliff Robertson called Flowers for Algernon. where
I've heard of that book also, but I don't think I've heard of that film rendition.
Yeah, maybe I'm just, you know, maybe it's not actually the name of the movie, but he has mental health debility where he's like a certain age, you know, maybe he's like, I don't know, 8 or 10 mentally, and they come up with this, you know, it's a serum, and he becomes extremely intelligent, and like he was intelligent, and then he, you know, became, you know, his brain kind of debilitated, and you see him slowly kind of fading, you know, once, you know, the serum wears off and it's not connecting with the rest of his body. And it's just so heart-wrenching, you know, to watch that, you know, because as an outsider, you know, you see the success, and you want them to have the success, just like in Awakenings, you know, you want Robert De Niro to remember all these things and, you know, not slip back into the catatonic state that he was in, and it doesn't happen, and it's just, oh my God, you know, it's like,
yeah, especially because you know that all the rest of those patients that they awakened were going to go through that same reverse, you know, debilitation and slip back into their former state. Yeah. So it was so heartbreaking.
It's a very fascinating movie, but it is freaking heart wrenching. It will tear your heart out as much. It really stands out as one of my favorite movies of all time. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. So if you think about his performance, that was not in any way. He was this very shy, quiet,
timid doctor.
There was not an ounce of "let me be funny" in it.
Mm-mm.
So, and it was, you know, really an outstanding performance. So.
I mean, I think he might have had a couple of little sarcastic comments, but that was as far as it went. There was never any comedy in this movie whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, anyway, let's move on to something.
Yeah,
another one.
No, but that is a good one. I mean, there's so many here. You know, like I know that The Fisher King was a big one too. And also Terry Gilliam. I didn't see that one either.
So did you not see The Fisher King, did you say?
No, I did not.
Man.
Oh,
really?
No. All right. Well, okay.
We're only in the early 90s.
I know, but it's so hard.
No,
okay.
Yeah, I know. I was actually waiting to be able to input like some of my favorites, but
all right. I was going to say something about The Fisher King, but we'll move on. Just go ahead, because there's too many others to talk about.
We'll do quick. I'm just going to say the ones that I think are really outstanding till we get to the end of the 90s, which is Mrs. Doubtfire, The Birdcage. Oh, my God.
The Birdcage is a good one.
Funniest movies ever. And I think I have to say maybe Good Will Hunting is my favorite of any of his dramatic performances. And those are pretty, you know, diverse movies, I guess. Well, maybe not. I guess he's in Dragon too, in Mrs. Doubtfire, and then his partner's in Dragon in the Birdcage. So
right,
a little bit of a theme back.
Yeah, he plays a gay man in the Birdcage. Yeah.
Right, right. But he's almost the straight man. I mean, straight,
right.
Like funny. You know,
right,
like
right. No, he is.
Mm-hmm. And Nathan Lane is the.
Oh my God, Nathan Lane.
The two of them together were so funny in that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually we didn't have to, but we watched it as part of a film study class when I was going through college.
Okay.
So I had to fill in a humanitarian credit, and so I took this film class, and I remember the teacher saying, "Oh, we're going to watch Birdcage," and I'm like, "Really?" You know, because I hadn't seen it before, but I totally dug on it, loved it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, "Yes, this is awesome." And Nathan Lane made it. Yeah, Nathan Lane made that so
absolutely
hilarious.
And even
yeah.
Hank Azaria, like between those three, Robin Williams.
Hank Azaria was hysterical in that movie.
Just tripping constantly on his platforms and shit.
You wouldn't think that like Robin Williams would be able to get stood up, you know, by like other actors, but they did that.
I wouldn't say that, because sometimes Robin Williams just gave a look, because, you know, he couldn't like articulate what he was saying because it was in front of his son's, you know, girlfriends and their family.
Right.
They're very, you know, they're very high-fluting family. But sometimes he would just give a look and you just knew what exactly he was saying. And that's kind of masterful to be able to do that and steal the scene just by giving that look.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So I have to jump in real quick. You flew past one that is part of my history. And I've mentioned this in the past that Aladdin was the song, the theme song for Aladdin was our first dance wedding song, you know?
Aww.
And sweet. So he played the genie in Aladdin, so that always has a special spot for us.
Mm, yeah.
Anyway,
and that
go
was
on.
A terrific performance too. And Aladdin is a terrific comedic performance.
Yeah, he's funny in that one.
There's 35-year-olds out there going, hey, what about Hook?
Yeah. You know, I didn't love Hook. I don't know about you guys. I don't know.
Nah, I wasn't a big Hook fan either.
Yeah,
even though I mean,
liked
you would,
I like it.
Dustin Hoffman was great.
I'm with you, Rose.
Yeah.
Thank you, dear.
No, and Robin Williams wasn't bad in that or anything, but I think it was just kind of weird. Like that relationship between him and Julia Roberts was very strange and kind of creepy almost. Yeah. that took away from the effectiveness of the film, I think.
Well, I don't want this to go away without at least bringing up Patch Adams. I thought Patch Adams was a great one.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie, too.
Definitely. That was a really good one.
Yeah, I'm not really with that one.
Oh, really? I think you'd like, if you like the rest of his other stuff, you know, some of the, he's got a very unique sense of humor in a lot of his movies. And Patch Adams is definitely, it falls into that comedic, yet serious type of movie.
Yeah.
There's a couple dark moments in it, but at the same time, it's very funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of his more creepier movies was One Hour Photo.
Oh, dude.
And I thought, oh, my God.
When was that?
I never watched this movie
again. 2002.
Yeah, was that 2002? Yeah. I stopped my list at 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
that
Death
was
the
a
Smoochie.
Creepy movie. Mm-hmm.
Death to Smoochie was good, too.
Mm. Okay. Well, to close with his performance in Good Will Hunting, those moments when he sat down and basically said, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Yeah.
It's not over and over. It's not your fault. And I think it's hard to make that kind of dialogue work. It's just the same freaking line over and over again. But it was so moving. And I think that was a perfect performance. So
people need to hear that, though.
Yeah, and that's what it takes, I think, to even try to get through to someone who's had that kind of abuse and suffered that kind of abuse in their life. So, but in any case, so although we couldn't possibly go through all of these films and all of the things that he has contributed, at least we got to do some of the earlier highlights.
Yeah.
So thanks for reminiscing with me. Okay, so in that case, I guess we have no choice but to close things out. So you can find us at Bonsai Retro Club on Podbean and do a review and download a bunch of stuff. And I am on Twitter at Suze Mattaboni and Instagram at Suzanne Mattaboni 80s. And I have a blog at SuzanneMattaboni.com. Everybody else want to give your stuff?
Dave, go ahead.
Take care of the Twitter, Instagram accounts for Bonsai Retro Club. So that's simply Bonsai Retro Club.
Cool.
That works. That.
Oh, I'm at 80s Auto Reverse on Twitter.
Rose?
This, 80s Music Girl on Twitter and Instagram, and also a fan page on Facebook. And I have a music page, Dragon's Rose Red, on Twitter as well.
Nice. Okay, well, now that you know how to find us all, I can say be excellent to each other. And I guess sign off. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Good job, Suzanne.
Hey. Excellent choice.
Thank you.
That was
Thank
a really
you,
good
Robin
one.
Williams, wherever you are.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 You know, as we come to the end of this phase of our life, we find ourselves trying to remember the good times and trying to forget the bad times. And we find ourselves thinking about the future. We start to worry, thinking, what am I going to do? Where am I going to be in 10 years? But I say to you, hey, look at me. Please, don't worry so much. Because in the end, none of us have very long on this earth. Life is fleeting. And if you're ever distressed, cast your eyes to the summer sky. When the stars are strung across the velvety night, and when a shooting star streaks through the blackness, turning night into day, make a wish. Think of me. And make your life spectacular. I know I did.